Did you know that medical errors in hospitals kill more Americans every year than AIDS, breast cancer, and car accidents combined? Well, our next guest never thought his mother would be a part of that statistic. After all, Dr. Jonathan Welch is a 30-something emergency room physician here in Boston. But when he flew out to Wisconsin after his mother, a cancer patient, took a turn for the worse, he went from confident doctor to helpless son, afraid of questioning the care she was getting. In other words, he became just like most of us. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from medical error expert Dr. Don Berwick. But first, Dr. Jonathan Welch joins us in the studio. And, John, of course, we just want to start by saying we are so sorry about what happened to your mom.
Well, thank you, Robin. One of the surprising things after having this story out is how many individuals have reached out to me with very similar stories. This is not a story told in isolation.
Yeah, well, let's tell yours. She was undergoing chemotherapy. She was found unresponsive and rushed to a hospital. You knew immediately what it was, sepsis. What did that tell you?
As an emergency physician, I see this condition a lot in my own practice. Oftentimes, after chemotherapy, patients' immune-fighting cells are wiped out, and that can leave individuals' immune systems very weak and prone to infection. And in my mother's case, that infection was a systemic one and quite a serious one. It's not a difficult diagnosis to make. It's not something that is going to be a case on HouseMD anytime soon, but it is quite a serious one.
And you knew that it meant you didn't have a lot of time.
Studies have shown that when this condition occurs, that time really is of the essence, and the treatments need to be delivered in a timely way.
24 hours.
24 hours at the most, yeah. Even more ideally sooner than that.
Okay, so you eat up many of those hours flying to Wisconsin. You rush to the hospital, and you come into her room and are eager to see what some of her stats are, but you say at that point you don't even see a cardiac monitor. What did that say to you?
Well, it was a point of real confusion for me because I couldn't imagine a scenario in which she wouldn't need a cardiac monitor, and so it began to make me wonder, simply because this particular condition, the treatment is well based in the medical literature. There's a series of steps that can occur and if and then statements that one takes in order to successfully treat this condition. And what I saw was that none of those steps were being taken.
I mean, I'm reading this and I'm thinking, why isn't it the same in every hospital? Why don't they have the same protocol? Why didn't somebody immediately know it was sepsis? Even the nurse seemed to know, but didn't seem to want to overstep her bounds.
That's right. It was a real surprise to me at the time that this protocol wasn't in place. There are many hospitals where this protocol still isn't implemented.
Well, and you now are like 12 hours into that 24 hours, and you're a doctor. You demand, I want my mother moved to the ICU. None of us, we wouldn't have known that, but you knew that. She's moved to the ICU, and then what?
Well, then we thought we might be in the clear. Certainly, we had lost some significant time, but I was hopeful that that was going to be the start of the right treatment for my mother, and in fact, I sent the rest of my family home. It was about midnight by that point in time. And what instead ensued was that her provider never consulted an intensive care physician, which is the doctor that more often than not treats systemic infections like this. And once again, the protocol never was enacted.
Well, I mean, this is amazing. You turn to the nurse and you say, okay, start the IV drip and all these things that whatever it is, that you know have to happen. And the nurse says, I can't. Her oncologist, her longtime doctor, has not consulted, as you said, with the intensive care doctor. I mean, at this point, do you not want to stand on a table in the middle of the ICU and say, no, I demand that this start?
You do. It was a very kind of trying situation. It felt a little bit like being in the Twilight Zone where your reality is kind of twisted upon you in ways and you can't figure out exactly what's going on. It was 3 a.m. My mother is calling for me every 10 minutes asking me to help her just because she's simply so uncomfortable in her own bed. And I begin to do a calculation in my mind thinking, how assertive do I need to be and how assertive can I be? If I start to raise a lot of trouble, there is a risk that that will affect the relationship between my mother and her oncologist. And what then?
Well, and this is where you become like the rest of us. You start worrying, and you're probably sleep-deprived at this point. It's 3 a.m. You can't believe what's happening. And you start being reduced to a helpless son and not the strong, aggressive doctor that you normally are.
That's exactly right. I mean, this was a story of roles changing.
Yeah. Well, then it became too late. I mean, your mother died. She died because she didn't get the care. I'm sorry. I can't even imagine how you feel about that.
It was very devastating for us.
Yeah. Well, then the next question is, and you get asked this, why didn't you sue?
Well, I think we, after this event, really were trying to look for a way, a mechanism, to make things different for future patients. We didn't want our mother's experience to occur to other patients in the future. And the real question was, what was the best way to do that? And to be frank, we did consider suing very early on, but we also were weighing that up against other options, especially as I spoke to my colleagues here in Boston. I was a trainee at the time that this occurred, and I was really trying to think about the best mechanisms for making a change. And I think we just felt like this was too destructive a process, that certainly it might open the eyes of the hospital, but there were other possibilities in which it would get filed away in an administrative drawer, and not much would occur, and maybe we'd get a financial payout, but that really wasn't the goal.
I'm imagining the goal was to change the process then, to make sure that everyone there knew about sepsis and what the chain of command would be if someone had it. Did that happen?
Well, we decided to send a letter to the hospital, hoping that that would in fact be the case. Ultimately, what happened was we waited about 4 months for a response from the hospital. I'm afraid to say that really many of the things that needed to change didn't.
Like, for instance?
One of the things that we were hoping would occur was that qualified critical care physicians would take care of patients who were in critical care units, especially when there were skills that were needed to treat those patients that only a critical care physician could provide. And that did not happen because of what we were told were, quote, political barriers.
What could be a political barrier to having the right doctor in the right place?
I asked the
same question. Insulting another doctor?
I wonder the same question.
Well, this is just incredible. And by the way, the doctor who was your mother's doctor for years, the oncologist, did he ever say why he didn't have her treated for sepsis, didn't make the call to the emergency care?
He didn't. I think it's hard sometimes after an error occurs for providers to approach a patient or a family to whom the error has occurred and have that open conversation. I'm empathetic as a physician, even though I make sure that I do approach patients when errors occur.
That's Dr. Jonathan Welch talking about his mother's death from a preventable infection. By the way, he's not naming the hospital in Wisconsin because, as he said, he wants to focus on solutions. But should hospitals have to publish medical errors so patients can be more informed? And meanwhile, quick question. Have you become an expert yourself? Do you have a similar story? Let us know, hereandnow.org. And by the way, later today, high-energy drinks sending kids to the ER. Let us know if you have a tale there as well. Back in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
If you just joined us, we're talking about medical errors. We just heard from Boston-based emergency doctor Jonathan Welch, who said when his mother was in a hospital in Wisconsin, he felt powerless to demand the kind of life-saving medical care he knew she needed and was not getting. She died of sepsis, an infection that is serious but treatable. Let's bring in now Don Berwick, a pediatrician and medical error expert who once led the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services under President Obama. Don, you listened to Dr. Welch. Tell his story, your thoughts.
Well, first, Robin, I share your empathy for what Dr. Welch went through and his family. I mean, it's heartrending, and it is all too familiar. I commonly, when I'm lecturing about patient safety, I'll go into a large audience, medical or otherwise, and say, who here knows someone, a friend, a family member, yourself, who's been injured by something that went wrong in your health care? And frankly, every hand goes up in the room. I think there are two parts to John's story, as I hear it. One is about sepsis itself. This is a sort of sleeper issue. It's really only in the past, really 8 or 10 years, that I think we've begun to understand how common it is, how many lives it takes, and how treatable it is if it's diagnosed early. And we really need a nationwide understanding of sepsis in the healthcare system as something that we've just got to jump on. The more general phenomenon that John's talking about is culture. Notice what would have had to happen to save his mother. There would have had to be training in early detection, protocols in place, and people deferring to the protocols, high levels of teamwork, checklists perhaps, and really most important of all, a culture which asks the family member, in this case the physician, to speak up, say what they know, and make them part of the team. And that's just not part of the training or culture of as much of medicine as should be.
Well, and, you know, we all have our own stories, as you said. I was once in an emergency room with my mom. She'd had a heart attack, and she then had a urinary tract infection while she was sitting in this emergency room waiting for the doctor, who didn't come in. He never came in. And they would not give her the every woman knows there's a simple pill, Pretium, that you can give to someone to just alleviate the pain. They would not give it to her because they couldn't reach the doctor. I had it in my car. And just like John has those regrets that you've said you have, he's nodding his head, yes, you regret that you didn't do something. I regret I didn't go out of that car and get it. What is it that happens to families? It's almost like you know something, but you can't act on it when you're in a hospital.
Yeah, you feel helpless, and then you feel guilty, and none of that is constructive. I think for your listeners, if you're in this kind of circumstance, it is a moment at which reaching as deep as you can for courage and speaking up is very important to do, even if it feels a little awkward at the time. And for the healthcare system, it's a new lesson for us, a level of learning that we've got to engage in that not just healthcare professionals, but patients and family members from any background, they're likely to know something that you don't know. The other thing is habits and rules. I don't know why the calls weren't made in John's story, but there were probably some relatively fossilized, dysfunctional rules in place about who's in charge and who has to sign off before you can act. And we really need to think more about the kind of agility and smart industries that have dealt with high hazards, like if you went to an aircraft carrier and watched the management of the hazards in an aircraft carrier deck, or if you went to a nuclear power plant that's well run, you'd see everybody can speak up and everybody can participate. We need that idea in healthcare.
Well, going forward, we know part of the Affordable Care Act is that there are provisions supposed to reduce medical errors, such as rewarding hospitals that reduce infections. We just talked about sepsis, that have reduced readmissions, penalize those that don't. Do you really think that hospitals are going to react to that, or are they just going to absorb those penalties?
All hospitals are going to react. They already are. When I was at CMS, I had the privilege of launching the so-called Partnership for Patients. That's a national challenge funded by the Affordable Care Act to provide support to hospitals and physicians all over the United States to reduce hospital-acquired conditions, infections, and complications like we're hearing about today, and also to reduce readmissions. And the response was dramatic. Lots of stakeholders showed up and said they would participate. But the change is hard. It's cultural change, and that's going to take longer than any of us would have wished.
Well, if it hits the bottom line, maybe it'll come faster. But just tell us just a simple change that you'd like to see instituted immediately. I mean, we know in a ProPublica story we're reading at Harvard Medical School, there's no way for medical students to report an error. There just isn't any avenue. Just tick off some of the things that you think could immediately make a huge difference.
Well, the most important thing is we need leaders. You can't get safety without leaders who say safety is crucial. Transparency helps. We need to open up, turn the lights on, and say that reporting of errors and injuries to patients it's an essential resource for making care safe. And I think we need bold goals. I would start with sepsis is a pretty good area. Here, there are probably thousands, maybe conceivably tens of thousands of lives that could be saved. If we had a national effort that said, in this one condition, we know what to do, we know how to detect it, we're not doing what we should yet, that's not because we don't want to, but because we haven't committed and we don't know, and make this a real national undertaking that would save lives right off the bat.
Jonathan Welch, your thoughts?
When I had this experience, I really looked nationally to find a new way forward for involving patients and families to make healthcare better and safer. And one of the things that I saw on many pilot sites is that discussions that used to happen between nurses or between doctors that would occur at a table outside of a patient's room were now being moved to the bedside. So patients now could hear the information that was being exchanged, correct any misinformation, ask any questions, know the plan for the day and the goals and outcomes that everybody was working towards on that patient's behalf.
Yeah. Well, let that be your mother's legacy then. You're nodding yes. Jonathan Welch, an emergency physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and also Don Berwick, a medical error expert. And Don, I just have to mention that there's a lot of speculation here in Massachusetts that you may be running for governor. I'm sure you'd like to announce that right now on our program.
I'm announcing only that I'm seriously considering it. It would be a great privilege. I'm going to find out whether this is right for me.
Okay. I'll keep us posted on that. Dr. Welch, Dr. Berwick, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay. Well, a personal injury law firm asked doctors what they'd like to see to prevent errors. They said online records of surgeries performed and patient satisfaction scores, safety culture scores from people who work there, camera and video equipment to monitor compliance, and an elimination of gag orders. Some doctors are now asking their patients to promise they won't make derogatory comments about the doctor. Your thoughts at hereandnow.org. News is next. Here and Now.